Good morning, this is AM, I'm Kim Landers. The Federal Opposition is still pushing for an investigation into the leaking of a photo of the female diplomat whose complaint led to the resignation of Cities Minister Jamie Briggs. The Prime Minister has ruled out an inquiry into the leak, although he has publicly rebuked Mr Briggs for sending the photo to some of his colleagues. Meanwhile, Labor is also questioning why the government is taking so long to appoint a new sex discrimination commissioner after Elizabeth Broderick's term expired in September. Mark Dreyfus is the Shadow Attorney General and he joins us on the line. Mark Dreyfus, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start with the Sex Discrimination Commissioner. A spokesperson for the Attorney General says the recruitment process is well underway. An announcement will be made shortly. Isn't that fair enough?
Look, there's nothing being done to fill this important position. The government's known for now 16 months that this position was going to be vacant. Liz Broderick's term was extended for a year back in September 2014. They knew she was ending her excellent term of service to the Commonwealth in September 15, and the position remains vacant. It's more than 4 months, and I'm floored that the government doesn't seem to care that Australia has no Sex Discrimination Commissioner.
But there is an acting Sex Discrimination Commissioner. The Human Rights Commission President, Gillian Triggs, is currently acting in the role. Doesn't that suffice?
This is symptomatic of the way in which this government's treated the Human Rights Commission. We also have no Disability Discrimination Commissioner because the Ages Discrimination Commissioner has been given that job in addition. And what we need is a dedicated Sex Discrimination Commissioner, as there has been since 1984 when a Labor government introduced the sex discrimination legislation in Australia.
When that appointment is made, will Labor promise to support that person regardless of who it is?
Well, we have made a practice of at all times supporting appointments where possible, unless they are clearly inappropriate. I had concerns about the appointment of Tim Wilson to the Human Rights Commissioner job, but even there, I was prepared to work with him, and Labor will be prepared to work with whoever is appointed. But I'm not going to give a blank cheque to the government to appoint whoever they wish to a very important position. What's important, however, is that the position remains vacant for more than 4 months. Women suffering discrimination have had no direct, dedicated advocate, and that's just unacceptable.
The Prime Minister has ruled out investigating who leaked the photo of the diplomat who complained about the now former Minister Jamie Briggs's behaviour in a Hong Kong bar. He says leak inquiries don't often achieve much. Do you want the Federal Police called in?
Mr Turnbull's lack of action on the Briggs-Duffin debacle has been nothing short of abysmal. He's still refusing to condemn the disgraceful behaviour of Jamie Briggs in taking the photo of the female public servant in the first place and sending it around.
Well, the Prime Minister says the sharing of the photograph was an unfortunate thing. It was not the right thing to do.
It's more than unfortunate. As has been pointed out by many people yesterday, this is the sort of behaviour that discourages women from making complaints in the first place. And it is absolutely appropriate that Mr Turnbull now embark on an investigation to show that this matter is serious. Actions speak a lot louder than words, and Mr Turnbull's failure to go on with this matter to find out, we know who took the photograph.
So do you want the Federal Police specifically to be called in?
It's a matter that needs to be investigated. I don't think
by whom?
Whether it's Federal Police or some other appropriate agency to look into the matter, but we need to know, and Mr Turnbull needs to show that he's taking this matter seriously by investigating who Mr Briggs sent this photograph to and who it was that gave it to the Australian newspaper so that it could be published.
Could the government use its recently introduced metadata laws to track down the culprit?
The tracking of telecommunications information is required for the investigation of criminal activity. I'm not sure that this is a criminal act that we're talking about here, and primarily, of course, that's what metadata, that's what telecommunications data should be used for. What I'm calling for, what Labor's calling for, is an investigation. And Mr Turnbull needs to show that he's taking this matter seriously. He's happy to criticise the media who published the photo, but not his own members of parliament, the Liberal members of parliament, who supplied this photograph to the media.
If I can take you to something else, Mel Brough has stood aside as the Special Minister of State. Today there are reports that he's asked not to be paid any of his ministerial salary. He's moved to a backbencher's office too. Is he to be commended for doing the right thing?
He is, and Mr. Brough is not coming back. He should not have been appointed to the ministry in the first place, and it won't matter whether or not the federal police decide that he has to be charged with these serious criminal offences. It's already apparent from what he has disclosed and what's become public about his involvement in the Grubby Ashby affair that he should never have been appointed to the ministry in the first place. So I say again, yes, it's appropriate that Mr. Brough no longer accept that ministerial salary, but it's also appropriate that he never again appear in the Turnbull ministry.
Mark Dreyfus, thank you very much for speaking with AM.
Thanks very much.
And that is the Shadow Attorney General, Mark Dreyfus. The US President Barack Obama has begun his final year in office by delivering another passionate speech about gun control in America. He's blasted the gun lobby for its lies and for holding Congress hostage. President Obama has again cried about the children killed in the Sandy Hook massacre, and he's proposed some simple measures to reduce gun violence. But all the Republican candidates vying to be the next president have already rejected the ideas. North America correspondent Michael Vincent reports.
The clock is ticking on his presidency, but Barack Obama has made it clear that there's one issue he will keep raising again and again, and his frustration is clear.
We know we can't stop every act of violence, every act of evil in the world, but maybe we could try to stop one act of evil, one act of violence.
Gun violence in the United States kills about 30,000 people a year. The president has listed it as one of his pieces of unfinished business. Today in the East Room of the White House, in front of victims of gun violence, as well as advocates for gun control, he spoke for over half an hour, stopping briefly to wipe back tears when remembering the children killed at Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut.
And from first graders in Newtown, first graders, and from every family who never imagined that their loved one would be taken from our lives by a bullet from a gun. Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad. And by the way, it happens on the streets of Chicago every day.
The president has once again proposed tougher gun law measures. He will expand those who must have background checks, demand more effective enforcement of stolen guns, and increase spending on mental health. But the president says he needs Congress to act as well. And for now, it is captive to the gun lobby.
So the gun lobby may be holding Congress hostage right now, but they cannot hold America hostage. We do not have to accept this carnage as the price of freedom. Now, I want to be clear, Congress still needs to act. The folks in this room will not rest until Congress does.
Even before Barack Obama spoke today, Republican candidates for the presidency had already dismissed his concerns and his proposals.
I don't like anything having to do with changing our Second Amendment.
His first impulse always is to take rights away from law-abiding citizens, and it's wrong. And to use executive powers he doesn't have is a pattern that is quite dangerous.
Now this president wants to act as if he's a king, as if he's a dictator. Fact is, if he wants to make changes to these laws, go to Congress and convince the Congress that they're necessary.
But President Obama still commands national media attention, and he appears set to use it to attack those who stand in the way of further gun control measures. He closed his speech today by speaking about a 15-year-old high school student who died just before Christmas in Knoxville, Tennessee, after going to a friend's house to play video games.
And then gunmen started firing. And Xavion, who was in high school, hadn't even gotten started in life, dove on top of three girls to shield them from the bullets. And he was shot in the head. And the girls were spared. He gave his life to save theirs.
The president says he's not asking people to lay down their lives, but instead get mobilized and organized and use their vote to elect a Congress that will act, because it won't happen, he says, in his presidency. Michael Vincent in Washington for AM.
Domestic violence workers are reporting an unprecedented rise in calls for help from women. The demands on one Queensland service have tripled. It's not yet known whether more women are being abused or whether more victims are seeking help, as Annie Guest reports from Brisbane.
Demand for domestic violence services in Queensland began rising several months ago, but lately it's become extraordinary.
I'm still trying to digest it myself. There's an overwhelming demand for assistance.
Di Mangan says since New Year's Day, the DV Connect telephone service has taken
2,000 calls in 4 days, which was quite a shock for us.
How does that compare to that period last year?
About three times as much, but it was just under 600 calls for the same period last year.
In your 40 years working in this sector, have you ever seen this level of demand?
Never, never.
Her sector's peak body, the Women's Services Network, is hearing stories of rising demand from around the country. The network's chairwoman is Julie Oberon.
The reporting's definitely going up and police responses to domestic violence are escalating. There's more and more women reporting to accident and emergency departments with injuries.
It's not yet known whether more women are being abused or whether more victims are seeking help because of increased publicity and awareness about domestic violence. The last major survey by the Bureau of Statistics in 2012 showed one in six women had experienced physical or sexual violence from a current or former partner. About one woman a week is killed. And Julie Oberon warns a woman is at most risk after the perpetrator learns she's leaving.
It's really important for anyone, if they have some choice over when they're going to leave, that they actually seek the support of a family violence service before they indicate that they're going to go.
But with more women seeking help, services are stretched.
We're hearing that women are turned away on a daily basis from women's refuges because they're already full.
Do you hear of people who have called a service and not been able to get accommodation and then found out that that woman has actually been killed?
Coroner's reports have indicated that one of the murdered women from New South Wales had tried to seek refuge a few times and wasn't able to access a service.
Often women and children are temporarily housed in motels and caravan parks, or in Queensland they're sometimes transported to cities where shelter is available. There, Di Mangan has a message for victims seeking help.
Persevere, be patient. We know the calls in the queue, we can see the light flashing. If someone isn't able to stay in the queue, it's not safe for them to do so. We'd certainly say call the police.
Di Mangan from DV Connect ending that report from Annie Guest. This is AM Around Australia, where it's 23 minutes past 7. You can also follow us on Twitter. Just search for the hashtag ABCAM. A world-first study into why people report suspected arsonists has found a rise in anonymous tip-offs about fire attacks in vulnerable parts of Victoria. AM has obtained exclusive access to the preliminary findings of the report into community attitudes about arson and reporting of the crime. Victoria Police charged a child with fire offences this week, and another man is accused of lighting a Christmas Day blaze north of Melbourne. Stephanie Corsetti reports.
Research suggests arson causes more than half of Australia's bushfires, but the reasons behind why people deliberately light fires are complex, and not a lot is known about the reporting of fires despite the need for public information to stop arson attacks. Now an Australian study has examined arson reporting in a social context for the first time in the hopes of preventing further fires. Paul Reid is a senior research fellow with Monash University.
The main reason people report is to save lives, property, neighbours, family, community, and even pets. If they understand that Crime Stoppers is anonymous, fear of revenge or retribution in their local community as the community becomes smaller is less likely to impact upon them. But if they are fearful of revenge, they're more likely to avoid speaking with the police.
The study looked at the bushfire-affected areas of Kinglake, Macedon and the Surf Coast. It found reporting levels in 2015 have strengthened to similar rates that were seen immediately after the deadly Black Saturday bushfires in 2009.
When it comes to arson, the profile of reporting falls or rises depending on where people sit in terms of their beliefs and their personality and their attitudes to crime, whether they feel that they can trust in the police and whether they understand that Crime Stoppers, for example, is completely anonymous.
The findings back up other international research which show areas with high rates of crime experience a reduction in reporting.
So there are interaction effects between how much a person actually knows the perpetrator, as well as the scale of the fire.
The not-for-profit agency Crime Stoppers commissioned the research. Samantha Hunter is the group's chief executive.
We started the campaign in the 2009-2010 season, and since then we've had over a 290% increase in arson reports.
There's also been a big improvement in public understanding along Victoria's surf coast about when to report clues to Crime Stoppers that might help to solve arson cases.
We are starting to identify where there's a reluctance, so we can change our tactics to make sure that every Victorian understands the message.
Victoria Police wasn't available for an interview, but this week detectives charged a 12-year-old boy with recklessly causing a bushfire in Victoria. And a 48-year-old man is facing more than a dozen charges for intentionally causing a bushfire on Christmas Day at Sunbury, north of Melbourne. Researchers hope the findings can be used globally by other countries that use a similar Crime Stoppers service.
Stephanie Corsetti reporting. The Indian government is facing accusations it has neglected victims of deadly floods in the restive northern state of Kashmir. The Prime Minister recently visited the disputed region, announcing billions in aid, but locals say much of that had been promised to them already. Frustrated Kashmiris are warning that without decent prospects, people will again embrace separatists' calls for independence. South Asia correspondent James Bennett reports.
In towns lining the banks of Kashmir's River Jhelum, simple factories shape the region's willow trees into cricket bats. Lengths of wood go through a bandsaw, a shaped on a bench planer, then hand-finished. Amid the industrious scenes, however, lies a mouldy legacy from deadly floods of 2014. In addition to claiming hundreds of lives, the swollen river destroyed countless livelihoods too. Batmaker Mukhtar Ahmed shows the ABC a floor-to-ceiling store of unsaleable bats.
Almost every batmaker lost 30 to 50% of his profits because of the floods. We tried to save as much as we could, but we lost a lot of bats in the floods.
Mukhtar Ahmed's small factory employs half a dozen people. He says he and fellow batmakers have seen no assistance whatsoever since.
We suffered a huge amount of losses. The industry lost billions of rupees, but we've received no help from the government.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi recently announced $12 billion for post-flood rebuilding and development in Kashmir. But Professor Shakil Kalanda from Kashmir's Centre for Social Studies says the grandiose sum hasn't impressed Kashmiris who've heard similar promises before.
And after that, it is being rehashed. The same scheme is being rehashed, Prime Minister after Prime Minister, with some bucks. And we are, in fact, being told that this money is coming for you.
In Indian-administered Kashmir, there's deep resentment towards a government seen as more preoccupied with controlling them instead of helping them. India and Pakistan both claim the restive region and each control part of it, but the independence movement remains a serious force. Professor Kalanda says economic assistance would alleviate the threat of violence.
Of course, you have growing unemployment, and that will definitely frustrate youngsters. You don't have any opportunity for absorption in the employment. If you have economic development, that will take care of our educated youth. But again, it is the political initiative that needs to be there.
A vocal blogger from abroad, Junaid Matu, gave up a lucrative consulting career in America to return to Kashmir and enter parliament.
Today, a very big number of Kashmiri, educated Kashmiri young men are resorting to militancy again, picking up the gun.
He agrees that without jobs, the region's youth will more easily succumb to separatists' call to arms, but also argues that India must do more than just pump money in.
Everybody wants peace, reconciliation and resolution. But we also know that there will be no peace and reconciliation unless there is political engagement, unless there is a sense of inclusiveness in the psyche of the Kashmiri youth, that yes, the Indian system recognizes my angst enough to sit with me and talk to me about my political demands.
This is James Bennett in Srinagar reporting for AM.
And that's AM for today. Briefly in finance, the Australian dollar is buying 71.5 US cents. It's 7:30.